The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by a comic shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geek programming, visit nerdyshow.com. For those of you joining us for the first time, Bad Storytellers is a podcast about a small group of amateur writers who submit and critique each other's work as well as discuss the written media we consume. It's like a book club but with a wider focus. Our group submissions are shared on our website, badstorytellers.com, and you can download them there if you'd like to read along with us. Additionally, we also accept your submissions for critique. If you would like some feedback with the same candor that we give each other, send in your submission to badstorytellers@gmail.com. Entries must be 10 pages or less. Additionally, at the end of each show, we roll the dice, pick three genres, and come up with a movie idea. Once we decide upon a name, we record the trailer for your listening pleasure. Enjoy. All right, so here we are, another episode of Bad Storytellers. This is our first one since our debut on Nerdy Show. So we are now part of the official Nerdy Show family.
Woo! Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, and thanks for letting us join you in your ears.
I'm happy to be the black sheep of another family.
So I'm Josh. I'm your host. With me today is Max.
Hello.
Liam.
Kamikaze.
And Doug is absent today because he is sick. So how are you guys?
Doing well.
Well.
Feeling good.
Yeah.
Got back to the gym.
Played a show.
Yeah.
Felt that was good.
Fun. Gymnasium.
Saw Refused. That was tight.
Yeah, I saw Refused as well.
Yeah.
It was super great.
You were at the same place? I didn't see you.
Yeah, we rode together.
I know.
And I refused to look at you.
Aha.
Let's talk about what we consumed between this and episode 20. Liam.
The thing I've been mainly watching is Lady Dynamite, Maria Bamford's Netflix original show.
I love her so much.
Her show's kick ass. It's great. There's a lot of meta humor. There's a lot of jokes about jokes and jokes about show business. And I kind of file it under kind of the Louis Mark Maron Masters of None thing that's going on where it's like reimagining Seinfeld.
Right. Like,
but if you could be on HBO and do whatever the hell you want and be really crazy. Yeah, it's super funny. But it's also definitely not for everyone. Apparently, it was like the reviews on Netflix for the first 2 days were really, really bad because not like the wrong people were watching it.
The wrong people?
People who would not find that entertaining. It is an acquired taste.
Yeah, I really dug her YouTube show, the Maria Bamford show, and I've heard that's a great metric. So if you like that,
yeah,
in like a 5 to 10 minute chunk, then you probably like this show. But if that's not your bag, then
oh, and I do want to add one thing to it, because it was something that it took me like 3 episodes to figure out. There are 3 distinct timelines in the show. There's her before her mental breakdown, during her mental, like her
it's
treatment.
A constant theme.
Yeah. Her treatment for her mental, well, this was like, this is a thing that happened pretty recently. Like she was in Duluth, Minnesota for a year and a half because she just lost her shit. So there was before her mental breakdown, while she's in Duluth, like recovering, and then when she moves back to L.A., and they do not expressly tell you that. They just go between them, and you kind of have to figure it out for yourself. So I wish someone would have told me that there were 3 distinct stages in her life that we were viewing. So
now
I could have made sense of it. Now I need to rewatch them.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm down. Anything else?
Not really. No, it's been a weird week.
You played a lot of music and
a lot of Fallout.
Yeah, a lot of Fallout.
A lot of
as well.
Fallout.
So what about you, Max?
I am in a World War II kick, I guess. I'm reading Citizen Soldiers now, which is about like non-commissioned officers and lieutenants in World War II and the invasion of Normandy. I watched The Desert Fox about Rommel.
Was that a movie?
Yeah, it was made in 1951, I believe. It is a movie. It's about Rommel and his life. And then it's written by a British officer who was captured and then became obsessed with Rommel. And he found his family and everything. Rommel's family, he talked to all the German officers and the English officers about him.
He's one of the most fascinating characters of World War II.
Yeah, he was a
I
weird
really
dude.
Like Captain America. He's my most fascinating character of World War II.
Red Skull, if you really get in there. I mean,
who doesn't have a soft spot for Red Skull?
Me. Captain America.
That's true. Yeah.
I don't either. Am I Captain America?
No.
In this group?
Oh. You would know.
Yeah. Do you have a shield?
I do, actually.
Oh, well, maybe.
I have a plastic version of that shield. Is plastic is basically vibranium, guys.
From what I hear, that's true.
Yeah.
But his shield isn't only vibranium, right? isn't it?
It's vibranium.
I
don't know. It's like the specific kind. Fuck that. We're about to get into like.
It's Wakanda vibranium, which is different than Antarctic vibranium, which does a different thing.
I was going to say, because I think it's mixed with.
Iron from.
Other places has different properties.
To be fair, it does. Yeah. Like, you know, you could tell if an iron. Like, because they found out that King Tut's dagger was made of meteor.
Mm-hmm.
It's meteor iron, which is pretty awesome.
Which is tight. Yeah.
It's pretty dope. I watched Clerks.
Yeah.
Again, just because I love it. And Kevin Smith is my homie.
Wait, you know Kevin Smith?
No.
You invite him on the podcast.
Doug met him.
Spiritual
Doug,
homie.
Doug is in his movie. Doug is in like the first few minutes of Tusk, cutting his leg off.
That movie is crazy.
Did you recognize Doug?
No.
Neither did I.
Watched it before I met
Are
Doug.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
You didn't recognize Doug? Yeah, Doug is totally in that movie. He's the kid who cuts off his own leg and then they have a funeral for him. And his picture's huge at the funeral.
I need to rewatch it. That would feel terrible.
Yes. And for listeners, Doug is in the movie Tusk.
Yeah.
So
sorry, Doug.
Tusk is definitely...
To be fair, I was hammered drunk watching that.
The second most damaging of the View Askew films.
The first being Chasing Amy?
No.
That's my favorite.
That's my favorite. Let's make out later.
You know the View Askew logo is a clown?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no. Now I know the one. I haven't seen that.
And it's about this dude who's like a party clown. He does birthdays. And he goes to someone's house to do a birthday party. And it's two rednecks who rape him.
Jesus.
And it's graphic and terrible. I don't ever want to watch it again.
So he's got the second one, I think, is coming out now. The second of the Maple Leaf trilogy.
Yeah.
The next one's going to be called Moose Jaws, and it's about a moose that kills people. It's like a huge moose, and I really hope that it doesn't eat them. I hope it's just a really scary moose, the way that, like, Jaws is a really scary shark.
Well, I don't know. Yoga Hosers looks ridiculous.
Yoga Hosers looks pretty good. Yeah, but Moose Jaws, it'd be awesome if it was just a really fucking scary moose.
Just
right?
Because
I'm scared of moose. They're like mammalian dinosaurs.
Yeah. Super deadly.
Yeah, they're crazy scary.
That would be cool. It wouldn't even have to be like a crazy moose.
It could just be a regular moose, and I'd be scared.
It's true, just angrier than normal, and like just kills humans
just
when it sees
them. A moose on roids.
I think a moose is a moose on roids.
Yeah. That's like a moose too far for me.
Yeah. God damn it.
Do the Mall Rats show.
Yeah, I heard about that.
That'd be pretty neat.
Anything else you watch?
No. I've been playing Hearts of Iron, and that's it.
What is Hearts of Iron about?
World War II. And you pick any country and then guide everything they do through the conflict. You can start in 1936.
So it's like Civ?
1939. No, you're kind of set like as your country. You just handle manufacturing, industry, resources, and your army. And it's pretty hard.
Sounds interesting.
It's a paradox game.
Paradox game. But you start in the 1930s. You have to convince your economy to go into a war economy to actually be able to do anything.
After World War One, too.
That's England has like negative 50% to recruitment because of World War One.
Jeez.
Yeah. And you have to get rid of that. So like you have to convince your country to go to war to do the fun thing you're there in the game for. So it's a lot of hours of just like waiting for things to click up before you can do anything interesting.
Oh, it's like a Facebook game.
Yeah. Unless you pick,
not really. I know. I'm joking.
You can pick one of the major countries and jump right in and have terrible things happen to you.
Well, that's good.
But if you start a small country to learn, it's just kind of boring.
I'm going to Ireland.
That's my playthrough now, and it's like
that's I
manufacturing when I played, is so low.
When I played Universal Europa Universalis,
yeah,
I started out as Ireland and then conquered all of Scotland. It was fun.
The cool thing about the
ultimate thing would be to start as Ireland and conquer England.
You're working
on it right now.
Oh, okay. I put in 200 hours into that game, and it's still only like 1620.
Jeez, yes,
I had to kill my own children, kind of a lot.
Oh,
because they were trying to take my throne. Yeah.
But the multiplayer on the Hearts of Iron, you can pick a country and have as many people play in that country as you want.
Huh.
So it's good for like group gaming because like one person could do army, one person could do navy, air force. Then you could have like a industry.
It's a total microman, and you can just go against the computer.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, and you can follow historic and set. The computer to follow historic, or you can let the computer just run wild.
Running wild sounds like awesome alternate history material.
Yeah, because the Ireland game I'm playing right now,
you won Ireland?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Spanish Civil War went the other way. So, like,
really?
The communists won the Spanish Civil War.
Youch. Well, as for me, I watched one of the best documentaries I've ever seen called Of Miracles and Men. And it's about the Miracle on Ice, where the U.S. beat the Soviets in the 80s Olympics. And
what we call the miracle.
it was incredible. It was an incredible game.
Yeah.
And it's about the Soviets. So the documentary is called Of Miracles and Men, referencing the Miracle on Ice and the movie Miracle. And it's about the Soviets and how the members of the Soviet team were so incredible and their original coach was so awesome. But then, like, the Soviet system took over. They fired the head coach that made them great. And then they put the head coach of the KGB team on there. And they're like, their first guy was like a hockey artist. Like, it was all about love your brother, do this. You know, he was like a true socialist romantic. And then the next guy was like a hockey accountant. And everything was down. He had a stopwatch for everything. It was incredible because it goes from being a story about how good these guys were at hockey and then they lose to the Americans. But then the NHL is like, hey, if you want to play with us, like, please. It becomes one Soviet player's struggle against the entire USSR government to get an international visa so that he can work overseas. And he's the first Soviet citizen to do it.
Tight.
It is.
That's awesome.
It like, it's, I don't want to spoil anything because there's some amazing moments in it, but even if you don't care anything about hockey, the ending image of this movie will bring you to tears in just like how triumphant it is.
Which
it's so
if you
good.
Don't like hockey, I will fight you.
and if you do like hockey, they can fight you as well, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah,
by playing hockey.
As long as we're playing hockey.
I just want to watch Goon again now.
That movie's so good.
I love Goon.
I finally got my wife to watch it.
Also, I saw In Bruges.
Yes.
I was warned against it by Doug. I know Doug hates this movie. He's probably going to be fuming that he's not on this podcast to tell me how wrong I am. But
I want a rebuttal next time.
I'll hear it. But
what's wrong with that movie?
I really liked it, and I realized that it's kind of self-indulgent at times.
Oh, it's super self-indulgent,
like, because
but that's
of the long conversations. But I felt like this was the movie I expected Tarantino to write after Reservoir Dogs. You know what I mean? Like, it's right in that same low-key, low-budget, just about the dialogue and criminals dealing with personal honor. And I don't know. It was good. I liked it.
I love it. I think it's a great movie. Brendan Gleeson is amazing.
Fantastic.
I
love
Brian
so
Gleeson.
Good.
Mm-hmm. His second best movie.
I mean, everybody's good in it. I'm not that big of a Colin Farrell fan, but he's good.
He's funny.
And Ralph Fiennes is fantastic as the mob boss. I also finished a very long book that I'm recommending to Liam specifically called Altered Carbon. And it's about a guy who has all these, basically solving a noir style mystery in the future. He was a colonialist and then has to go back to Earth and is wearing somebody else's body.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You started talking about
it. I was talking to you about that last time. It is noir as fuck. But especially because he's not even a cop. Like, he's just a detective that has to do what he has to do because of some shit that went down. Between this guy and another, and everybody's—it's about power moves and him being caught between several what they call meths, which are Methuselahs, which are people who are 300 years or older and just keep renewing their bodies and stuff,
and are super politically powerful for
that
reason.
Yeah, for that reason. So it's about him kind of unraveling the web of bullshit that all these different meths have going for him and sticking it to him. The sex scenes in the book are incredibly graphic. Not in a bad way. I'm just like, you know, I'm reading it. I'm like, whoa, okay, yeah. And then
that is P and V G. Yeah, wow.
But then it gets to the fight scenes, and I'm like, oh, this is just as graphic. And then he'll get to, like, he walks into a club, and you hear his description of it. You're like, oh, this is just how this guy describes stuff. Like, you never don't know exactly what you're looking at. Like, he'll describe lots of characters down to the finest detail, just so that when an event happens and they act, like, you know everything about what's going
on. Can you imagine hanging out with him, though? Like, ask him a question, and he's just there for a half hour. It's like, all right, dude, thank you.
Was it raining? Well, I'm... Okay, so you know I like dogs, right? I also watch more X-Files and more Deep Space Nine.
We're in Deep Space now.
Oh, I also
end of season four.
Deep Space Nine today.
Yeah?
I forgot. Yeah. I watched If Wishes Were Horses, and then that's the one where Rumpelstiltskin is on board.
God damn it.
That's the thing about Star Trek. Episode. Like, they're like, we're all science. And then they just get silly. Like,
Rumpelstiltskin.
Yeah. And the fattest baseball player I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah, the Japanese guy.
Yeah, so it's like fat Japanese guy. And like,
he's the greatest
he's
of all time.
He's the greatest baseball player ever. It's like, did they have to choose?
Like I said, I believe the man who plays Gul Dukat is a real alien named Gul Dukat. I believe that Michael Dorn is Worf.
No, I believe that Michael Dorn is Worf when he goes home.
I'm glad you clarified that, because I was like, you think the guy on Star Trek is a real alien they found?
I do not believe that Commander Sisko likes baseball.
No, I just don't believe it. Even when he's like, I love baseball,
I believe Jake when he's like, I like baseball. And I believe the lady that Sisko's trying to seduce, where her brother plays baseball, I believe she likes baseball. Anytime he talks about baseball, he sounds like
he's describing it out of a book.
Yeah, it's terrible. I don't think the actor's ever been to a baseball game.
They should have gone with something the actor really loves, because, like, as it turns out, he's a crazy great, like, piano player and, like, jazz enthusiast.
He's a super weirdo.
That would be awesome.
That would be amazing.
Do you like jazz? I buy that instead of baseball. Would you like to see a game of baseball? Go get the hot dogs. Yes. You know, it's so alien. I hate it.
Didn't the MLB, like, die 200 years before he was born?
They
canceled.
But they keep it alive.
I think one of the things he said, he wrote it in
the episode I watched today. He's like, yeah, I wrote the entire Holosuite baseball program. He put in all the stats and everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, when they describe it, they're like, oh, no one's played a game of baseball in 150 years.
But then the lady's brother is
started up a league.
Well, he's just in a league on a different planet.
But yeah, no one, like, before them, no one had done it in a while, like, forever.
That doesn't make it easy. Why would you ever stop playing baseball?
I don't know. Eugenics war?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay,
good point.
That's how they explain a lot of things. We're like, just eugenics war.
Yeah, but I mean, people didn't stop playing baseball during Vietnam or World War II.
No, they played it in the jungle, I bet.
Yeah.
But, like, so the sport was dead. He looks back 100 years to find what he's going to do.
I think
baseball is just a tradition, but maybe the MLB isn't.
And his poor kid is, like, born into it and can't do anything. He's stuck.
He loves baseball. Jake loves baseball.
Jake, but nobody else loves baseball.
I bet Nog would like baseball if Nog ever tried it.
He made his son a weird ass kid, just like every other baseball father.
That's true.
You know? Yeah.
Not as bad as
here, son. Here's a stats book.
I'm gonna be a writer, Dad.
Dude, no. Jake
should be the unofficial mascot of this show.
I do. I have to say, like,
a guy who writes too little.
Regrets
for the rest of his life.
There was a big day when, like, my dad bought two baseball almanacs for the previous year, and he was like, you'll need this. Like, I will.
Dad, how could you see? How could you already know the kind of nerd I'm going to be? All right, guys. Well, let's move on to our own writing. And we have a guest submission today.
Bum, bum.
Yes,
the lovely
Jeffrey McSorley Jr.
The lovely Jeffrey McSorley Jr. sent us in some of his work for on-air criticism. So we're going to talk about that last. We'll go into that. We'll do our own stuff first. And then, Jeff, you're going to get both barrels.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert,
I hated it.
Before I get into it, I just want to thank everybody who's been leaving us ratings and reviews on iTunes. If you don't feel like you want to write anything as a review, if you leave us a rating, we really appreciate it. It definitely helps us gain exposure, you know, among the other writing podcasts. So please, please, please. Rate us, review us, and we absolutely read them. Don't worry. Also, like Jeff here, if you want to write into the podcast or just give us feedback, you can contact us at badstorytellers@gmail.com. So, Liam, you didn't bring something in today.
I got a problem.
All right, let's talk about it.
And I need you guys to help me flesh out a scene. Because rather than starting on the trip for winter, I want to start in the middle of things with the two characters already captured and away from their homeland, feeling kind of shitty.
So it's like a framing device.
Yeah.
For,
okay. And then I'll continue telling both stories at the same time. And then as they're, like, blossoming into adulthood, they do something or discover a lesson in the next chapter, it'll help them solve their current problem in the present.
Now, they're captured together?
One is captured first, then the other one goes to save them.
Sorry, I mean, but
they're in the same boat, yeah.
So they're both, you're thinking of making it so they're both captured to start with?
Yes.
Okay. Leading up to that point, they're like, how'd you get here? Well, what happened then? Like, and that kind of frames the story? Is that what you're...
No. No, it's just kind of like a more memory. Like, they're sitting there in the desert, and he's like, oh, it's cold because it's just nighttime in the desert, and there's nothing. He's like, but this isn't what real cold is like. And then
you don't know cold.
Yeah.
I like that, or like people trying to figure out why they're such good friends, because you're saying they're going to be in a city that everyone just betrays each other all the time.
I wonder how long it took them to actually get, like, it took the ox to actually get there to meet up with the fox.
Yeah.
Like, did it take a couple years, you know? Like, maybe that could be interesting.
I was thinking
too.
like a month and a half.
Okay.
Not forever. So when he sees him, he's like, it's not been like, I haven't seen you for forever, brother.
The ox hasn't gotten, you know, swole as hell.
Yeah.
You could have like a training montage.
No.
Hearts of Fire.
Where he's like pushing something heavy in a circle.
I would almost say like they start going through just the campaign and just the needing to march all the time. You just start shedding weight.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I think that's a cool idea. What do you, if you want to frame it that way, are you starting the chronological, the earliest chronological part of your story, are you starting where the winter march happened?
Yes.
Okay.
That would be, well, I mean, there might be one or two bits of information before that, but that's where the second main plot line is going to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that.
I just want to know, the problem I'm having is finding out what information to tell in their adventure story mm-hmm. versus their childhood story. And that's, what do I let drop in the first chapter?
Well, I think maybe plotting out everything that happened until they met, not... You don't have to go in afterwards, mm-hmm. but that would give you a good place to start as to what's different about them now in that month and a half, that what's changed. Because, like, specifically what they're wearing, what their expectations
are. Oh, no, that
I
got. No, that I got. It's what the reader needs from their characterization because it's not being released as things are happening. Like, sometimes the thing that you, like, you need to find out something that happened beforehand to figure out who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Like... I want the ox to just know like two or three extra languages.
Okay.
Because he's a good, he's a good, thorough, dedicated student in the way that the fox just isn't. He's smart, but he mm-hmm. just doesn't give a shit about that. He's like, whatever.
So you mean like maybe a guard speaks a different language that the fox doesn't?
But I was thinking that it'd be fun for the ox to know, be able to speak it the entire time, but only until you learn it. In the past that he knows that mm-hmm. for some reason that he would be able to like, what do you keep from the reader?
I like that.
How do you express information to the reader in the right order?
Yeah.
And how do you do that in an interesting manner?
And that's a worry too, because you don't want it to seem like Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah.
Like where he's like Superman, where every time there's a new problem, he just has a hidden new power.
What I would say is you could do that with like facial reactions to where he doesn't want to show the guards that he understands what you're saying. But he would still, like, kind of react to their words.
Well, I was thinking he just, like, he wouldn't talk to them because he just doesn't talk to
but,
people.
But, I mean, you
he
could, like,
give his shit.
You know, kind of foreshadow for the audience that he understands. And then when they find out later, like, oh, shit, because he was...
Yeah, there's a bunch of ways to do the language thing. Either, like, the guards speak it and Clovis doesn't. Or he could be dressed as a guard trying to break him out and speaking their language. And if none of the guards speak the same language as Clovis...
Mm-hmm.
Bard has to pretend that he doesn't understand him too.
Yeah,
there's a bunch of different scenes you can come up with that if they're in fact already captured or something.
The thing that I know that I want is I want them to start in a cell, half burying themselves in sand, just because there's no other insulation and just mm-hmm. the temperature's dropping, and they get to the ox thinks to himself that this isn't what cold is like. He remembers what true cold is, and leading into without directly telling anyone what's going on, that he's not from this place.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the main thing you're establishing is like he's a fish out of water starting in this place. And then the next chapter is this is how he became a man.
I would even like they're coming from a communist society, right?
Oh, yeah. Complete like, well, not, even communist is bad to like.
It's a, no, it's, but it's a
commune.
That's a
communal, yeah, I was like, that's a loaded kind of political suggestion.
It's not like, large enough to be communist.
Yes.
It's more just of a commune.
It's more along the lines of like they have to work together or they'll die.
Yeah. So what if, like, they go up and like to a restaurant or whatever, they just take food because food is just something that's for people.
That's a good idea.
They don't understand
some kind
the
of
idea of payment or anything, and that gets them into trouble.
Or if they have something and they just give it to somebody, you know, because mm-hmm. they like somebody gives them something that they don't immediately need and they mm-hmm. see somebody who does and they're like, mm-hmm. there you go.
Mm-hmm.
And it upsets some kind of maybe the person that gave it to them, you know.
He's like, why would you give it? Like, is it worthless to you that you gave it away? And he's like, they have greater need.
I mean, basically what you're saying is you want to write a piece of communist propaganda,
which
I think we can all get behind, right?
Yeah.
No war will result.
This program, right?
Yeah, bad capitalists. Yeah.
Dude, I qualify for that.
You run a store.
Exactly, but not very well.
Okay. So what else is there? Do you want to make a specific scene, or are you just looking for
ideas? Yeah, well, I'm looking for... something to heavily contrast the winter wonderland that was their home, and let you understand that it's not a story about children. It's about not stopping being a child, mm-hmm. kind of, in a way, but not in a hokey coming of age story. Where at the end they're only a year older, like, well, I'm a man now. It's the story of their entire lives.
Okay. Where do you want it to end up?
Bloodbath.
Well, I mean, like, just both characters die? Is that...
Oh, no. Okay. They could totally live. It's just that everything around them, every society around them needs to have been explodes.
Just pitched against each other. It'd be cool to see Clovis in some kind of leader role. Like, if things really hit the fan, and then he's like, let me get this. Like, let me... Just listen to me, everybody. And he could pull people out of the fire. He's responsible for saving everybody, and Bart's responsible for getting him to the spot where he could do that.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's later down the line. I need them to not be captured anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But I also know one of the things in the beginning where, like, they think about escaping, and Clovis is like, you could totally break this cage. Like, I know you can. And he's like, and if we did, it's 100 miles of desert in any direction, and we have no water. Like, we'll just, it's, the bars are nothing.
I like that idea of letting the carriage take them to where they're going.
Yeah, it was like, we're dead. If they just decided to leave us, we'd die. And then I have to find a scene where they are found useful and get to not be captured anymore. And they have no reason to return because I haven't gotten to this. But if you desert your post, if you leave,
yeah,
you just can't come back.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem is I don't have an outline.
Yeah,
that's why I always default to that when I feel like I don't have anything to say. I don't have an outline, so it's hard to pitch within the same context. You know what I mean? I feel like you got a good starting spot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's so many places.
I like it better than the original starting spot I have because I want to have different points and then I want to draw lines to them,
mm-hmm.
and that way I get to do that better, and I get to do that with the reader rather than me doing it on my own and telling it straight chronologically.
Right, but you should know what the chronological story is, because
yes.
that'll if you have the chronology of when they were kids laid out, then you have to figure out the chronology of the adventure now,
yeah.
that they've caught up with each other, so that you can figure out where to put those stories to build it, you know. But what about you, Max?
I brought in another piece on my Sinclair's Reindeer piece. It is kind of a juxtaposition of the last piece I brought in, to where this is the upper class talking about the battle instead of the lower class officery just sitting in a bar.
I liked how different it was,
yeah.
from the last one. I think you could put one right after the other, right next to each other,
and it would work.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of little tiny bits of humor that work. The mention of the mother was great. There is one thing I think I really need.
Yes,
and that's when he mentions the wolves.
Mm-hmm.
And the lions.
I think I need more from the captain. To be like in a kind of an internal monologue,
okay.
where I was like, he's no wolf,
or he calls himself a lion. Remember the general does? He's like, the gentry, we're lions. This guy ain't no lion.
Yeah,
you know.
I want more.
I see what you're saying.
I want from the captain a little more of
internal
distancing while staying, because the fact that he would even, like, they say, like, oh, you have a problem sharing, mm-hmm. credit. You have that outward slip up. I want to see the inward mechanism that causes him to require himself to do that.
Okay.
Maybe he doesn't respect lions the way that these guys do. Because if you think about a male lion,
yeah.
you know, all it does is sit around and breed all day, and every once in a while has to fight another male lion, but the female lions do,
yeah.
all the work, you know? So.
Or there could be a fun metaphor where he's like, I never enjoyed the company of actual lions, and... Mm-hmm. Wolves definitely are savage beasts, but my lieutenant is a trusted dog.
Not to mention male lions are more likely to eat their own young.
Yeah.
You know, so, something like that. Like, if
yeah.
there's, if there's some commentary where
run a line, because he is aristocratic and he believes they are better than the common man, but he also sees evidence that that's not true. And he's
goal oriented.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I want just a little aside, a little shot into that guy's head.
But even
to distance him a little.
You do
more.
Know that he feels that way.
Yes.
After reading this, I don't want mm-hmm. us to tell you that, like, to belabor the point.
Like, one little thing, like, about his true feelings about that guy in his own head,
mm-hmm.
not
yeah.
filtered through bullshit.
And maybe if you want him to be like, he does believe that the people are more noble. If you have somebody to juxtapose that guy against. Like you know, so-and-so did this and did this and did this. And then this guy's like, I'm a lion. And he's fat and he's an asshole, you know?
Okay. Yeah, I like that. I could definitely add that in. I am trying to get more into the head of the character.
You have.
Who I'm writing. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You're already getting there. Yeah. And you're doing it the right way, which is stuff is happening around them. And then your characters act. And a lot of times that'll give you the moment. It's difficult to get his opinion on a character that's not directly in the scene, though, without having a little inner monologue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I mean, that'll change as the actual story itself has more substance. Mm-hmm. You know, like once you know where you want the novel to end, it's going to be easier to find those great moments.
Are you trying to say outline?
Yes.
Murder-suicide, by the way. That's how it's got to end.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time on a British website that tells you, like, if you have to write a letter to the Queen, how to do it.
Oh, really?
So I was doing, like, dukes and counts and everything, because it's...
I love the duke's name in this one.
Volding?
No, let me hold on.
Yeah, go ahead. Apparently, it's title, their job, then who they are and where they're from. Like, the English use earls instead of counts. So you have an earl and a countess.
Mm-hmm.
You won't have a count. And then there's people who are related to the royal family are different. They're...
Yeah, this was Admiral Lord Walton Broad Count Kimple.
Yes.
That's great. I love that.
I'm trying to go more German than English, but kind of a mix of the two.
Walton Broad.
Like if the Normans never invaded England, kind of.
I like that. Yeah, I like that feel because it feels
more vaunted.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it.
Cool.
I don't have a lot. I mean, it's two pages.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. I mean, there's not all that much too. But I'm just trying to get a feel more of the world. There's something I wanted to happen now, but writing this, I realized there's not enough time for like the revolution to kick off.
Yeah, I would wait for the revolution.
I'm going to send him on another mission. Mm-hmm. And when he comes back, like shit's hitting the fan.
Has he ever been to the place where the revolution is?
It's going to be there.
Oh, okay.
He's in the colonial capital.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to leave and come back and things are just going to be nuts.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'm for it.
Yeah, but it is, I agree with you that it's too soon to have a revolution because you don't know enough about the status quo for the revolution to have weight.
As for me, I brought in kind of the end of chapter 5 because I wanted to transition to everything that's coming after chapter 5, which is a lot. I need to kind of kick it off. It's basically Malcolm starts working in the village and he starts learning under Kilvin and he finds out that Kilvin is going to start teaching him his hrine, which is like the martial art, but it's also like a set of rules to live by and specific to each house. And I feel like I got there a little too fast. Like the relationship with the children. Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to agree with you, but you hit every major note right.
Oh, okay.
Even because there's the moment where he just like even does something stupid enough to get meat. And there's a change in the children after that immediately that I liked. Because they were just like, meat, yay. That was enough reason to like Malcolm.
Okay.
Even in my head, the slow buildup of figuring out that there are different clans in, and you didn't have to show the basic teaching moment. You got to go a couple days in or a weekend, however far in he is.
It was like 2 days at working.
Yeah.
And this is his first day hauling rubble.
Rock, yeah.
Yeah.
And also, I like how that's set up where, like, he's stauncher.
He's more stronger.
Than the Wilvicks. So you're already setting that up. There's a lot of foreshadowing and kind of a good, solid plot points that you're hitting real hard.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, but then
it ended really sweet, and I loved it.
Yeah, that part was a little rushed, maybe, to me.
That's what felt rushed for me.
Yeah, well, you're in our harangue and everything. And it's like, I think that could have been led up to a little more.
Yeah.
More, because Kilvin wouldn't be like... Oh, Squee, come on in, you know. He's more of a dour guy.
Yeah.
I don't think he would let the other one tell him.
I think it might be better received.
What about like an initiation scene?
Like trial by fire.
Yeah.
Well, I was thinking it might be better received if I make it more clear, if I show a scene where everybody disapproves of Kilvin even teaching this kid anything, because then... You get the idea that Kilvin kind of gets pissed off when people tell him what to do, and that would be a better motivation for him doing this sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I like that. Like, that's a good plan.
Are you guys getting enough? This is my big thing, is I haven't really described the Wilvicks themselves and the different clans. I want to do that next, because when Kilvin's teaching him, you know, it's an info dump, basically. But do you guys have a good sense of what things look like in the village?
there's everything's made of like trees and vines and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Except for the stuff that's made out of rock.
Yeah. Well, that now is seems to be like that grew as a bigger part of mm-hmm. what is made of that in my head through this chapter.
Okay.
The giant circle tree in the middle.
Okay.
The cut down one. Yep.
I guess all I it's there's, just yeah, supposed to be a transition.
There's a river. So, there's a river running through it.
In my head, I see it as like the Last Samurai.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's a good where they finally accept him and he starts learning and that kind of thing. That's a good parallel. Maybe I'll look into how that does it a little better. Except for Malcolm didn't kill Kilvin's wife.
It's true.
Or does he?
No, he doesn't. Oh. I've already got that backstory locked up.
Or does he?
Like, no.
He lands in this new planet.
No. I could say it's slower, too.
He wakes up out of the bathroom and he's laying on like a dead animal. And he's like, oh, weird. And he keeps walking.
Maybe I'll eat this. That'd be terrible.
He walks into the village with her fur like wrapped around him.
He's covered in her blood, just like, I'm so cold. Please let me in. Sees that they're all the same species and he goes, oh.
Then it's just, it's like 600 pages of chase. Like Mad Max.
That would be awesome. So, all right, let's get on to our first internet submission.
Yes.
So this is by Jeffrey McSorley Jr. It's called Dawn of Magic, and it is the prologue to a story. Now, I don't know what the story is.
Nope.
But I'm stoked for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you did a lot of stuff right in this, Jeff.
You didn't have me, and then at the end you had me.
Oh no. He had me in the worst way by the second paragraph. Where like I even like audibly said like, "Oh no."
Yeah, you held it up to your face and went, "Oh no, this is going to be sad."
Yeah.
Now, I like how you started it here, Jeff. You do a bunch of stuff where you, in the first two paragraphs, you really make the descriptions work for you. They do a lot of work for you in this. There's maybe a couple things are a little over-described, but the tone I get from it is perfect. I mean, you really nail the horror of being stuck in this woman's body.
Yeah.
Over everything. And then...
like, I became slightly physically uncomfortable reading it.
Yeah. I mean, it felt like, especially when the guards give her the smoothie and knock her out. By the way, if anybody wants to read along, it's going to be posted on the website. You can read as well. But there's a moment where she gets upset because she can tell that people are talking about her and she has Alzheimer's and she won't let them feed her food. She wants to eat her food on her own, and they like grab her and try to force feed her, and it's very stressful. It's a stressful scene because it's kind of like the birth scene in Rosemary's Baby.
Ugh.
You know, where everybody just grabs her and they're forcing her and she doesn't know what's going on and that kind of thing. And then at the end of this story, she wakes up in a young body and everybody in the hospital has been like mummified. And she steals the life force unknowingly, not on purpose. She sees it happen from the head nurse who slumped over a desk.
Mm-hmm.
I of all like the left turn is really good. I like where it's going, but I think there's the work that's to be done in this is to be done in like the last half a page, because
mm-hmm.
because it goes into a great description. Like in great detail of how young she is,
mm-hmm.
I almost want that to be stretched out more.
Like how it feels.
How it feels, and when she like rather than just like noticing that she doesn't have liver, like she notices she doesn't have liver spots, I want her to get up and try and do stuff immediately. Like if she's feeling fresh and going, and like she discovers someone else, and then she sees that she no longer has gray hair, rather than going all young imagery up front and then everyone being mummified, you could spread out the young imagery
mm-hmm.
and kind of pepper it in, and I think that would be more effective.
Maybe.
Connect the two directly in...
Well, I think... So the purpose of this prologue is served by what you... Well, I'm assuming at least, because we don't know the rest of your story. So we don't know what's coming or anything like that. If she's the main character of your story, I think the only things you need to change about this is establish what she wants... Normally, like what's normally within her life that she can't have anymore, or if there's somewhere she wanted to go or family member she wanted to see or something like that, so that when you see her, I don't know how separate this prologue is, but usually it is separate from the main events of the story. So if this is months before the time of your story, because this is the dawn of magic, and then you skip ahead in time.
Yeah, we're like they mentioned that she has a doll. Someone gave her the doll.
Right.
We don't even get to know that person's name.
Right. I want to know more about her personally and the things she misses about being young. So maybe when we see her later.
And if I read it right.
And this is all assumption. I mean, like I said, we have no idea what's coming. But just more about what she wants other than just not to be old.
And he had me intrigued because when the bodies are puffing up, doesn't he say she knows what's happening when the body puffs the crimson?
Yeah.
So now that's a whole nother turn where it's like, does she know what's happening?
I think, yeah, she screams and...
Yeah, yeah. And it just goes into her.
And she feels younger the moment it happens. So it's like, I don't know. I would imagine she knows what's happening because it's obvious.
Okay, that or
but,
is it...
But like I said, I don't know for sure.
Yeah, maybe she's this has happened before.
Right. So this is good because she's like a time vampire. Yeah, Jeff, we like it. Keep up the good work. Like I said, without knowing more about your story, it's hard to give you feedback on what needs to change, except for, like I said, if you're going to reuse this character, I need to know more about...
Her motivation,
what she's lost up to this point other than just her youth. And you give little hints. Yeah, you give little hints about her family, but nothing really that leaves us kind of wondering what she's going to do with this next, other than this is a crazy situation. We have no idea what anybody would do.
Thank you for sending it in.
Yeah, but thank you. And if any of you guys want to send in your stuff for criticism, this was very good, Jeff. We appreciate this. Send it to badstorytellers@gmail.com. It has to be 10 pages or less. Do not get screwy with the font size. We will know. Even Max's font is a little too small, in my opinion.
I use 11.
Yeah, well, I use 12.
Yeah, I use 12.
So please
MLA
use 12.
MLA handbook, man.
I threw that away when I got my degree.
Good, because you're a teacher now.
Yeah.
Yeah, great.
Nope.
I have three editions of that stupid thing.
Actually, as a teacher, I had to... style. Yeah, I had to find a more obscure one that students wouldn't know just to mess with them.
Oh, like so that is the secret.
Yeah, there's like a...
I'm so glad I get to see, like, that's my Wizard of Oz moment.
There's a list.
The secret
is
you have a bunch of stuff that you want and then you think about it a lot. That's the secret.
I use Peruvian Standard. It calls for a 6-point font.
No.
Triple spacing.
It looks like college ruled paper.
And the font has to be Wingdings.
Yeah. Or Comic Sans.
Exclusively Comic Sans. Papyrus is good too.
I love Comic Sans because didn't it come from V for Vendetta?
I don't know.
No.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's the copy print from V for Vendetta.
Really?
Came Comic Sans.
I think Comic Sans is older than V for Vendetta.
That's what I heard. If I'm wrong, oh well.
I'm gonna look it up.
We're going on air retraction.
I just have to know. That's the
problem. Yeah.
Released in 1994.
No, I don't think I'm right.
Or Microsoft, inspired by comic book lettering.
Okay, inspired by comic book lettering.
Yep. Oh, so interesting.
Oh, The Dark Knight Returns.
His decision was to create a new face based on the lettering style of comic books he had in his office, specifically The Dark Knight Returns, lettered by John Costanza.
And Watchmen, that's what it was.
Dave
Watchmen.
Gibbons. All right, so I don't have my fucking thing.
Hang on. He's all out of list.
I got
He's
dice.
So lost without them.
All right, so I think after today, I might come up with a new list of genres.
All right.
I would like if we could take off most of the...
Asian
obscure
ones.
Chinese ones. Not even Asian. Just like the hopping zombies and the magistrate who has to find them.
Yeah, we'll have to get rid of the hopping
zombies. Because we pulled that one out
Zhang
of our
Xi.
Ass.
Now it's time for the bad story trailers part of the podcast where we pick three genres, roll the dice, and then come up with a movie idea based on the genres and record the trailer.
Yay!
Yay.
Okay, guys. So this will be hopefully the last time we use this list. We're going to pick new lists in the future.
We'll put Bertone in.
Max, you do the first roll.
But Bertonian has to have Johnny Depp and...
okay. I can't do a Johnny Depp voice. Johnny Depp can't do a Johnny Depp voice.
8, which is Comedy General.
Cool. Comedy General. A story that tells a series of funny or comical events intended to make the audience laugh.
Ooh.
I've never heard of that before.
Huh.
Go ahead.
You should look into it. 84.
Cyberpunk.
So are we not doing sequels anymore?
No.
Oh, okay. That was just a one.
Yeah, we'll probably do another one eventually.
Cyberpunk comedy.
A futuristic storyline dealing with the people who have been physically or mentally enhanced with cybernetic components, often featuring cyborgs or the singularity as a major theme, and generally, and this was one word, somewhat cynical or dystopian, hence the, quote, punk portion of the name. This is often confused or placed with techno thriller, which is actually a separate and less specialized genre.
Is a 80s sex comedy on there? Because then we could do cyber junk.
My turn.
It'd be like meatballs.
God damn it.
84. Cyberpunk. All right, let's try again. 4. 4 is coming up a lot. Spy fiction.
Yeah, done.
But this, done. This sounds like a comedy Johnny Mnemonic.
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
I'm into it.
It's a spy fiction is a story about a secret agent or spy or military personnel member who is sent on a secret espionage mission. All right, so.
All right. The man who knew too little. Yeah.
Dude.
The man who knew too little.
I love that movie so much.
The man who knew too little about implants.
Yeah. And he gets.
The man who had his memory erased.
It's Johnny Mnemonic.
So, like, he went into, like a holodeck booth to have a vacation. And it turned out to be like a spy thing. And it was like,
it's like Total Recall.
Yeah.
Where he may still be in there.
We can inject comedy into any story.
Yeah.
What is the, let's pick the type of augment and then the story, I think the story will revolve around that.
What if it's a man whose brain was transplanted into a dog?
No.
Wow, you said no pretty quick there.
No.
I was seriously considering that idea.
No. I hate.
And he's a spy.
I hate man, like. Other than Turner and Hooch, I'm off dog movies.
What if it's like an implant?
I fucking hate them.
You know, an actual body implant that he's not supposed to have.
That sounds pretty cool.
That he you know, either finds or buys.
Well, it's probably an accident because that's where the comedy, like fish out of water comedy, is the easiest, I think, thing to go for.
I heard somebody wanted to create a setting. This is on 4chan's tabletop gaming forum. They wanted to create a setting that was still in Who Framed Roger Rabbit, where people were grafting cartoon parts to themselves, like gorilla arms and stuff, and they were going to call it Toon Punk.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and you still have to solve crimes and shit.
That would be dope.
Yeah, it sounds pretty rad. But
can we play that?
Maybe in the future.
Because imagine...
We'll have to make it, though.
The talking bullets, like you would have...
Oh, that'd be so sweet. Yeah. The singing sword.
Yes.
Hmm.
So are we going with implants? Are we going with in the head stuff? Or
implants? I just finished a cyberpunk noir novel, and you can like transplant people into different bodies and shit.
What if he's like a low level hacker or scammer or something? Kind of, and he like
stumbles upon something.
Yeah, puts his consciousness into something he's not supposed to be in, and they're coming for him.
Maybe it has something to do with pornography.
That is ripe for comedy or awful.
Maybe he like. There's like extreme VR porn, and he like tries to dig through the net to find people's like personal VR porn, and then one of them turns out to be like a secret meeting for military codes or something. That it's all done through a cheesy sex dialogue.
Yes,
so I like that. That's funny enough.
The Joint Chiefs of Staff, but they're all like naked women in their avatars.
Yeah, it's like I heard you needed some plumbing done. And it's like, yes, the eagle has landed in the plumbing, or something stupid.
Who are you? I need to go.
I'm just trying to jerk off.
They look over and you're in the corner.
Who's this guy? Who let that guy in?
It was like, he's part of the program, right? He has to pretend to just.
That's terrible.
So if it's like Joint Chiefs of Staff and like criminals are meeting in VR porn to do business, and he has to pretend he's part of the program so that they don't kill him.
Yes. Oh, baby.
So how's it a spy? So okay. So the government, like the FBI or whatever, finds out about this, and he like reports it.
Yeah.
And they're like, we don't know enough about this to do this. We're gonna have to wear a digital wire in your head, and you're gonna have to go into all these porno.
There could even be a montage of sorry, wrong one.
Why does that guy keep showing up in these? It's
a weird programming.
When you watch enough porn, and that one guy's always there, and you're like, what is he doing here? God, I hate the way he faces.
Or that one living room, or like IKEA set. Shows up all the time. It's weird.
We were sitting at dinner, this big group of us, and somebody's like, oh, they even had an episode of this anime show that was in that Japanese pool. And I'm like, what Japanese pool? And they're like, this one from all the Japanese pornos. And I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And then somebody pulls up a picture of it on the phone, and I go, oh, I have seen that. I have seen that pool. I saw a man throw somebody in there while,
doing stuff.
Making love.
Sorry, nerdy show.
Okay, so... That's our story. What's our guy's name?
Trip.
No.
Trip Fisk. He sells swords. Sorry. Oh, God. What's one of my favorite lines of all time is from, was it The Danger of Swords or whatever it's called?
The Knot for Decoration.
Yeah. One of my favorite lines of all time is he meets Batman. And Batman basically is like, look, I used to be addicted to sucking dick. So you know, whatever. And then later, he found out that Trip Fisk used to sell swords, and people died from it, and that's why he hates swords now. And he goes up against the bad guy. He's going to kill him. And he goes, killing me won't change the fact that you used to sell swords. And he goes, yeah, well, Batman sucked a lot of dicks. He goes, what does that mean? He goes, it means people can change. That's it.
That's crazy. I mean, I didn't know Ninja Train.
Cautionary Tale of Swords. That's
a cautionary tale of swords. Yeah, it's great.
We call him
Tyler Dirtbag.
Skag Dagman. Skag Dagman.
Clancy Constantine.
We need a QWERTY hacker name. Boner fart.
69. Rap God. Did you hear? Rap God. Did you hear about? Oh man, one of our friends' kids had the Xbox name Rap God, and his dad made him change it. And we were like, "Why? That's perfect."
That's great.
He's like, "I don't want my 12-year-old son having the name Rap God at Xbox." I'm like, "No. That's exactly what you want."
Yeah, I can't believe he got that name.
I can't believe he got that name either.
Like, how did he get it before Eminem? Eminem has a song called Rap God.
Shockwave update.
iTunes update.
Denizen.
Norton.
You're just naming crappy programs.
Yeah, but they're retro, so he'd be like, yeah.
You're putting a lot of crap on this guy.
I like Skag as a first name
for
a future for a cyberpunk hacker.
Could his name just be Skag?
Yeah. Give him a normal last name.
Yeah.
If he was a hacker, he wouldn't tell people his last name.
Yeah,
would he?
He'd just be You're Skag. Right. He'd just be hacker name.
Yeah, Skag.
Like Crash with two Override.
G's.
Yeah.
Skag with two G's and an underscore after.
But my one question is he.
No, underscore in between the G's.
Is he elite or is he not elite?
I think he is mid level.
It's funnier if he's not elite.
So he's making his way to elite.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So this will be like.
Spies Like Us.
So Angelina Jolie won't talk to him yet.
No, he's not supposed to be a spy. And he's just a hacker to get porn.
Neither are spies, Liz. Because they're not supposed to be spies.
Right. Okay, so Skag. Okay, so what nuclear launch codes are one thing, but with the future, what do you think? Like a computer virus that gets into people's heads?
Yeah, it's got to be a future
get
thing.
Get the black shakes, man.
Yeah. And it should be something that affects everyone in their normal life. And he's found the answer to this thing that's like a plague.
And they're using it to target a specific group of people.
Communists.
So what if it's like our government, and then only a small group of non-corrupt FBI agents are actually investigating this on their own, and they're the ones, he's their ace in the hole, so to speak.
That's the name of the movie, Ace in the Hole.
That's good, Ace in the Hole. Maybe his name's Ace. That's a good pun.
Skag Ace.
No, Ace.
Ace.
Because he will have to have sex with virtual ladies in front of these people.
It's true.
To pretend that he's not there.
Are you a cop?
Are you cop? Ooh, baby, it feels so good.
1-0, 1-0, 0-1-0.
Smack him. It's funny. Ooh, baby, it feels so good. He has to like stand in idle animations that repeat.
He's like, now suck his dick. It's real funny.
Yeah. So his name's Ace, the hacker. We'll call him Ace Redman. Sorry, that's a terrible joke.
Damn it.
Ace Redman, because backwards it's Red Menace.
But what if he's like...
That was Doug's joke.
I think he's more of like a freedom person. We can call him like Freely.
Ace Freely?
Yeah.
Thanks.
I'm going to stab you in the neck right now.
For Ace Bigums.
If I've been stabbed every time you threaten to stab me.
No, Ace is his hacker name.
Yeah,
right?
He wouldn't have a last name.
Ace underscore Bigums. Yeah, Ace.
Ace underscore hacker.
Little X, Lee Big Hacksor. X, little X, Ace. Little right. X, big X.
So call Ace in the Hole because he has to pretend to have sex with these virtual ladies and be a virtual man himself. That's pretty funny.
It's funny. I like all right. It's funny.
All right.
Does it hit all of our components? Yeah.
So, wait. So what's the issue that he's has to eavesdrop on these guys? World leaders meeting together to perpetuate some kind of disease you get from being in the web too long?
Yeah.
Is that kind of a little too much like Snow Crash, though?
That is a bit like Snow Crash. Well, Snow Crash, somebody has to give it to you specifically.
Okay.
Like, you know, hey man, you want to try some Snow Crash?
Yeah.
Yeah. What? Unless it does something specific. Maybe it is like a mind control thing. Maybe it forces
just
you
a little
to,
more patriotic. Just a little more party line.
Yeah, you're a little less likely to like it. It gives you a lot of subliminal cues, so you won't unseat the incumbent or something.
Yeah.
What do we call it?
So what if it's just like
Ace in the Hole?
Just like
no. The the stuff they're using.
What if it's just like a backdoor into anyone's head at any time?
What do they call it in the NSA? The backdoor into everybody's phones and stuff.
Prism?
Prism, yeah. We'll call it Prism 2.0.
No.
Prism rape.
Jesus.
God, fuck you. Kaleidoscope.
Spectrum?
Spectrum, prism.
Because of prism.
Yeah. We'll call it Spectrum.
Spectrum.
Cool. All right, so our movie's Ace in the Hole, and the thing that he finds out about is Spectrum, which has been long rumored by the hacking community. And, like, you ever see that movie...
Hackers?
He needs to be, like, non-believer, too, that it doesn't exist, and then he stumbles upon it. There's
a movie where Cyclops, the guy who plays Cyclops, James Marsden,
yeah,
goes to a town. He's a teenager, and the kids who rebel show up at school as, like, prep kids the next day, and they act completely different, and they only hang out with each other. And then he finds out it's because their parents actually pay people to operate on them and insert, like, this thing behind their eye that controls them.
Mm-hmm.
And then it happens to his best friend.
Ooh, that's weird.
It was a cool movie. It's not a great movie, but it's the idea is creepy enough to carry the entire film. What is that movie called? Let me look up James Marsden real quick so that I can link it on the podcast.
Must Love Dogs.
But the first one is like a command. Must.
If love dogs. If exist, then love dogs. All right, so the movie was called Disturbing Behavior.
Oh.
It was good.
I've seen the cover before. Never
It's actually, one. I mean, it's like I said, it's not a great movie. Not rated very well.
Yeah.
But the idea is good enough to carry an entire film, and I think it does. All right, so you guys ready?
Yeah.
Ace in the Hole?
Ace in the Hole.
Ace in the Hole.
Ace in the Hole.
For an amateur hacker by the name of Ace, the world of private virtual reality servers was a treasure trove of cheap thrills.
Happy birthday, dear Tommy. Happy birthday to you.
Surprise, motherfuckers!
But after hacking into one of his most difficult targets yet, he was in for a surprise of his own.
Oh yeah, baby.
You like that, don't you, baby?
That's it?
Oh yeah.
A porno loop?
Oh yeah, baby.
You like that, don't you, baby?
Whatever.
Oh yeah, baby.
You like
They've already patched it. When's the next phase?
I'll upload it after this.
You like that,
I've had to make alterations to ensure compliance.
Oh, yeah.
You had to alter Spectrum? I was assured it was randomized.
Shit, that's the vice president. Did you just hear something?
Of course! I can't unhear this cheesy shit.
Is it just me, or was this man not here before?
No, I think he was.
After reporting information on the Spectrum virus to the FBI, Ace discovered that his skills were very much in demand.
Do I really have to wear this?
The diaper is essential. You have to belong.
Jesus Christ.
Someone is onto us. I got 7 subpoenas on my desk this morning alone.
Hang on. Does this giant baby look familiar to you?
Goo goo gaga. Suck my rattle, baby.
I don't know. It looks fine.
Join Ace and our nation's top detectives as they take down a worldwide digital conspiracy in Ace in the Hole.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to Bad Storytellers, now presented by Nerdy Show. If you like what you heard, please rate and review us on iTunes, like and follow us on SoundCloud and Audioboom, or subscribe and stream us from Google Play. I've been your host, Josh LaForge, and I'd like to thank my writing group again, Doug Banks, Liam Malone, and Max Wessel. Now remember, as listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend or funding the network via Patreon. Any size contribution gets you exclusive outtakes, episodes, and images from across the network, and there's even more perks available. Just head to patreon.com/nerdyshow to find out how you or your company can underwrite this or other Nerdy Show programming. Visit nerdyshow.com/sponsorships. For more podcasts, articles, community forums, and other awesomeness, visit nerdyshow.com. and be sure to follow Nerdy Show and Bad Storytellers on all your favorite social networks. If it's geeky, we've got it covered.